Today's program is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
I'm Erica Wise, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 4th, 2014. We've got a great show here at Beer Sessions Radio. Gun Hill Brewing from the Bronx, they won the GABF. We've got some European brewers here. Taste the Rainbow, the festival, a lot of cool things happening in New York City. And it's November 11th, 2014. Beer Sessions Radio is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. And check us out on Twitter, @beer_sessions. Maggie's tweeting live, and join in. And we'll give you some surprises later in the show. Some special guests tonight. Our good buddy, Yeppe, from Evil Twin and Taurus. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. You've been associated with some pretty cool cats lately.
I sure have. I'm one of them, I hope.
And Yeppe's wearing his famous Evil More Jesus t-shirt. Where can I get a t-shirt from your collection?
You can send me an email. Always.
Really?
Jamie for you, of course.
Really? Nice. Yeah. All right. And we got our good buddies from the Bronx, Gun Hill Brewing, Chris Sheehan and Dave Lopez. Congratulations. You guys won a silver medal at the GABF?
Gold medal.
Gold medal. Oh. And for which beer was that?
Our Void of Light. It's a foreign style stout.
So you have some experience with that. I know that when you brewed at Chelsea, you also were making a stout that won awards.
This is actually my fifth award in the category in my third gold medal. I won two bronze medals as well.
So what is it about that beer for you? I mean, you just love that beer?
It's a style I'm very fond of, but I guess I kind of have a knack for it as well.
Is that what we're drinking right now?
No, this is our Nelson's Oatmeal Stout. It's just a classic oatmeal stout made with a combination of rolled oats and malted oats.
Well, this is great, man. It's so great to have you guys on the show. BR's here from Shelton Brothers. You guys had the festival out in Los Angeles this year?
In Los Angeles this year, Saturday and Sunday, about 70 brewers from around the world, plus California and also the U.S.
All right, and we got two English brewers here who are out there. You guys just introduce yourselves.
How you going? I'm Colin Strong. I'm head brewer at Buxton Brewery from the center of England in Derbyshire.
All right.
I'm Richard Burhouse. I'm the managing director of Magic Rock Brewing in Yorkshire, England.
All right, and we also got from Gun Hill,
Dave Lopez, one of the two owners of the brewery.
All right, so here's our show, and let's talk beer. So let's talk about the Great American Beer Fest. So you guys are up in Gun Hill in the Bronx, historical area. And we've had you on before and told your story, but it was a big news when you guys went to GABF. And does everyone know what that is, the Great American Beer Fest? So what's the deal with that? It's all American beers.
It is all American beers, but it is now the world's largest beer competition. It's bigger than anything else on the globe.
And Dave, did you go out there too?
I was out there. Chris and I were out there.
And what did you think about that as an experience, as a new brewery owner?
I thought it was fantastic. I didn't know what to expect, but when I went out there, my mind was blown.
So did you guys just submit, or you asked? How's the process of getting into it?
We submitted, we pursued it, and it basically is almost kind of a lottery now to try to get in there. They cap you off at this point because so many breweries are trying to get in there. It is prestigious to win, and so lots of new breweries are starting up, and they want to get their hat in the ring. So ultimately, they only allowed us to enter four beers this year.
Chris, what was the first stout you ever made? Because you've been brewing for how many years now?
I mean, I've been in the trade, New York City brewers. Going on 24 years now, I've been in the trade. The first stout I made professionally was Kinnickinnick Old Scout Stout at the 20 Tank Brewery in San Francisco. The first year I competed at the Great American Beer Festival in 1995, I won an honorable mention back in the day when they handed it out for that stout. And the next year, I won a gold medal in that's a sweet style stout that I made there. But in that same year, I also won a bronze medal for a stout in the foreign style category, which was called Heart of Darkness.
That's great. And Dave, when you guys started out with Gun Hill, I mean, what was the process of finding a brewer? Because, I mean, Chris is a great brewer, and everyone in the community knows him. BR, you knew him from some of the homebrew groups that you're part of.
My partner and I, when we decided we were going to go ahead with this whole project, we actually put an ad out on probrewer.com, and we had a bunch of hits and a bunch of submissions, and Chris was actually one of the very first that we looked at, and he was the first person that we met with. And you know, quickly after we met with him, my partner and I looked at each other and we go, I think that's the guy. And we met with a couple other people, but it was pretty apparent that Chris was the guy we wanted to lead up the brewery and the brewing process.
All right. What do you guys think? We got some great brewers in this room. What do you guys think of this stout? It's pretty nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful beer. The oatmeal really shines through. It's a beer style I'm very, very fond of personally as well. So, congratulations, guys. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like it. It's nice and easy drinkable and very smooth, and yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And what are some of these? Do you have secret ingredients, or are you open to sharing your ingredients?
I wouldn't say there's any secret ingredients. It's pretty much straightforward oatmeal stout recipe. Like I said, I use a combination of malted oats and rolled oats. There is a little bit of caramel malt in there. I have some chocolate malt and some black malt in there.
Great. And what is it about winning a GABF medal? I mean, is it based on style? I mean,
really do have to brew very specifically to style guidelines. And when you really nail the category is when you get the gold medal.
Yeah. Yepi, do you submit to anything like that? I mean, are you considered an American brewer?
I'm actually not sure. I think I am. I haven't submitted any beers to any competition. It's just not my thing. I don't know. I didn't get around to it, so maybe I will one day. I don't know. It's not something I think too much about. But, you know, it's fun to see you win every year, and it's definitely fun to see when new brewers come in and beat the old guys. I like that.
So what are you doing with these guys? You got the English guys here.
What
are you doing with them?
I don't know. We're just hanging out. No, I mean, Rich and I have actually been friends for quite a while. And Colin and I met each other for the first time for real about a month ago when I was in Manchester, which is close to Buxton, to make a collaboration beer. You know, we just all like to hang out and be friends, and I've brewed with both of these guys, and it's fun to have them here. Today we are doing this rainbow project where we are, you know, showcasing some of the beers that we do together.
So they're going over to tourist after the show.
Yeah, it's already on, but I think we're supposed to be there at 7 o'clock, so people can come and shake the English men's hands.
You've got some cool brewers visiting you at tourist, don't you? Last week you had this guy from Prairie Artisan Heath.
Yeah,
he's also doing his own.
He's doing his own new thing called the Willow Ales. I mean, being a brewer, I have a lot of friends in the brewing community, so it makes it a little bit easier to invite people. You know, they know who I am, and I know who they are, and yeah, it's fun to have them all. We don't do a lot of events, though. I mean, I don't want to do it all the time. It has to make sense. If you do events all the time, people get tired of it, I think. But this one made sense, and I think it's actually the only time all 7 rainbow beers are being served in the USA at the same time. And it's a very cool project, and it brought 14 great breweries together from Europe. And, you know, it's just a fun way to do something different.
And BR, which of the brewers, we might as well jump to that, the rainbow brewers. Which of the brewers do you guys represent? And why don't you tell us who they are? Do you know who they all are?
Now I have to remember who they are. So basically what it was is Ryan from Siren Craft Brewing in England had selected, this is I believe the third year he's doing the rainbow or the collaboration project, and puts a bunch of brewers' names in a hat that he's chosen, picks one from one hat, one from another. Those are going to be the two collaborating. And then they were also from another hat chosen a color of the rainbow. And they had to brew a beer inspired by the color of the rainbow. Some are very obvious. Others you have to give some thought to. Some of them we don't know why the beer actually has the connotation, you know, the connection with the color. But they're all going to be, all the beers are going to be on tonight. Like I said, as Yepa said, this is the only place in the U.S. that all 7 will be on together. And I would say, I want to say at least one brewer from each of the collaborations is one of ours. Please don't make me name them all right now. It's been a long weekend.
You got what, the beer Siren and De Molen.
Yeah.
You guys import De Molen.
De Molen, right? And we do some Siren beers as well, yeah.
Buxton.
Buxton.
And Omnipolo. Mm-hmm. And you got Magic Rock and Evil Twin. and Partisan in McKellar. Beavertown and Napa. Is Napa,
Napa beer? Napa beer from Spain, yep, yeah.
And Wild Beer Co. and Tokolomoto.
Tokolomoto from Italy, yes.
And Hawkshead and Lervig.
Lervig is from Norway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys, so Jeppe and Rich, you guys collaborated on one of these, huh?
Yes,
look at it's Red Pogonophobia. Dry hot Flanders.
What does pogonophobia mean, Rich?
It means the fear of beards, I guess. I know. We discussed it. We discussed the recipe and the idea straight away when you get a red beer is, I mean, the classic styles of Flanders red, I guess. So we thought we'd do that. Obviously, that beer takes a long time to make. We only had 10 months, so we tried to speed things up a little bit. We did soured the beer in the kettle, ran it off to a number of red wine barrels, and left it for secondary for a long time. And I think the result is pretty decent. But these sort of things, it's creative. It was a push to do it for our schedule and for fitting it in with things. But we really enjoyed doing it. You know, and pogonophobia is fear of beards. I don't know why we chose that. Really, I talked to Jeppe, and he wanted something a little bit out of the ordinary. I guess, you know, not just magic evil magic, something like that. It needed to be something more interesting than that. So,
he
has a beard, right?
Yeah.
I'm scared of his beard.
Exactly.
Hey, Chris, have you done any crazy collaborations like that?
No, not yet. I haven't really been involved in any collaborations. The closest thing has been a number of pro-am beers that I've done, like in my years at Chelsea, with award-winning home brewers, taking their recipes and extrapolating off of a homebrew recipe and making a full batch beer, like in that case, 30-barrel system. There are challenges involved, of course, but that's the closest I've done thus far. There's been talk of it. I've talked with Chris down at 508 about doing collaborations, but I just haven't done anything of that nature yet.
But the working with homebrewers, that's a big part of the New York beer scene, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's very important to be involved in the homebrewing community.
I know there were some years there were some homebrew competitions, and the winners, you would brew their beers as
yes.
a batch.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you guys? So in England, we'll switch over to that. We got Colin. Look at his new names, new people. Colin from Buxton and Rich from Magic Rock. So is there a good homebrew scene in the UK?
Yeah, it's definitely been improving the last couple of years. I think for years it was kind of like a running joke around many breweries that homebrewers, you know, there was always this really... They'd send their beers off to professional breweries for tastings, and you'd get these terrible, sour, gushing, like really badly made beers. But over the last, I guess, for 5 years... The scene has really, really kicked off over there, and it's improved so much. You start getting beers through from homebrewers that you think these could easily be commercially made and very well sold and well looked after. It really has changed a lot over the last few years. And I guess the volume of breweries that have started up in the UK as well has really sort of fed the homebrewing scene as well.
Yeah. I think traditionally it wasn't. You know, it was extract. Basically, you know, there were kits in the local Boots the Chemist or in the supermarket. It was homebrew extract kits, and people weren't doing full grain brewing. But it seems to be coming on now, and I think we're involved in a few competitions with bar groups and local people. And I think that's what it needs. You know, it needs yeah. the respect there. I've just come up from come over from San Diego, and homebrewing made that scene. You know, and mm-hmm. All the professional brewers are still members of QOF, you know, the local homebrew group, or they tend to be. And I love that sort of integration of creativity, and you know, that's where things get tried out, and the good ones make it, the bad ones don't need to. It's small batch, you know, so it's good.
Sure, man. Cheers to everybody. Hey, Gunnell, did you guys bring a second beer too?
As a matter of fact, we did. Our gold medal winning Void of Light is here.
All right. So it's the Void of Light, that's the foreign export stuff.
Correct.
Okay. Why do breweries have to name every beer? Why can't it just be Gunhill Foreign Export Stuff?
Our two flagship beers are just Gunhill Gold and Gunhill IPA.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I like to have fun naming beers at the same time. So, you know, this is an example
void of
that.
You mean as in it's so dark, it's a void of light?
Correct.
Wow. I got to listen more to the words. And Yepy, you're the ultimate namer. I mean...
Yeah, I don't name all my beers. My wife does a lot of them, but...
Oh, so you should have an expert just to name your beers.
I mean, yeah, no, but I just, again, it's all about having fun, and if you can come up with a fun name and know that it's going to come out in 200,000 copies, it's kind of a fascinating thought that 200,000 people are going to see this name and think, what the hell is going on? I mean, when we did Even More Jesus, it's a long story, and it's a name that's really has caught on, and a lot of people think it's a weird and fun name and something they definitely remember. You know, it wasn't because we wanted to make a weird name, it just came up, and we decided to call it beer that. And
no, I love the names. And for you guys in England, what are the names of your beers?
Most of our flagship beers at Buxton are all named after local climbing ranges, because the Jeff Quinn, who owns the brewery, is very, very he loves climbing, spends a lot of time out climbing, and our flagship beer is Axe Edge. It's a 6.8% sort of American style IPA, all American hops. We do lots of beers with High Towards, a climbing range, End Cloud, Rain Shadow, all climbing and walking ranges out in the hills in Derbyshire. So yeah, that's kind of the theme of our brewery, really.
What about for you, Rich? How do you name your beers?
Obviously the Magic Rock in our name comes from the family business, imports and wholesales, crystals and minerals. It's like we have a rock shop, and the brewery was set up in an outbuilding on that site. And that was the basis of the name. You know, I wanted some proven sort of history in the name if people looked into it, but I didn't want to name the beers after rocks and crystals. You know, I thought that'd be pretty lame, really. So it's a tenuous link to the word magic. We have a kind of circus sideshow theme, really. A little sort of Coney Island, I guess, if people know that. But we have Cannonball, our IPA, Human Cannonball, the double IPA. We do a yearly release, triple IPAs, Unhuman Cannonball. And we have these sort of themes going on. Not all of them are circus-based. Well, Rapture is a good beer for us. And Highwire, I guess, is circus-themed. But I'm always on the lookout for a good name. You know, I think... Yepa undersold it a little bit earlier. It's all we have, you know, as smaller breweries. We can't spend loads of money on marketing, so the name is what's going to make people notice and you know, get their intrigue piqued, and that's what we do. Yeah, so I'm always thinking.
Chris, this is great, man. This is the Voidalite, right?
Yes.
Gonhilg Voidalite, foreign export stout.
Thank you. I also would like to mention to my British compatriots here that it was a British band that inspired the name for this beer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a band called Winter Filth, a black metal band from England.
Okay.
And the name of this, one of their songs is Void of Light.
Right,
and
right.
I saw that. I'm like, what a great name for a song.
Dude, you're far out, man. Yeah. All right. Hey, we have to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
So we
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, a great place. We're all going to have a pizza afterwards. So if you're ever out here on a Tuesday night around 6 o'clock, look for the Beer Sessions Radio crew. We've got most of the cast and crew hanging out having pizzas and beers, and usually you can taste some of the beers that we had on air, which is one of the coolest things about recording out here. But, you know, Jack, I want you to tell me, who was that band that just played? Because you got such great music all the time. What was that band?
Thanks, man. That's a band called Hard Bodies. One of the chefs here at Roberta's, it's his band. So Chef Eric.
That's cool stuff.
So Hard Bodies.
Jack Inslee's always spinning great tunes for us in between. And I don't have to think about that stuff because I don't really know much about music. What about music and beer? You're talking about heavy black metal inspired your beer, Chris. Who else here is inspired by music when they make a beer or label? Are you into music yet?
I am. I mean, I don't play music, but I'm definitely into it. And I have also named, I have a beer called Ashtray Heart, which is smoked
Love
porter,
that.
And it's named after a White Stripes song.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And Chris, have you ever named any other beers after music songs or anything?
Currently, no, I haven't really done that, but I'm still always drawing inspiration from the music I listen to.
Yeah, and what about you guys in England?
We've never directly named a beer after a song, but we do. We listen to a lot of sort of Pantera and stuff like heavy thrash metal around the brewery. It's kind of our thing. So, well, it's kind of my thing. I think the rest of the brewery team got a bit knacked off of me for making them listen to it all the time. But
and what about you, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, we're big fans of the Manchester scene and Factory Records, really. And I guess the logo was inspired by that. You know, I grew up listening to Joy Division, New Order, all those guys. But I mean, more specifically, we have our sour beer is called Circus of Sour. I mean, that was like a happy coincidence, really. I'm not a massive Donovan fan, but I realised, yeah, that's a Donovan record. So I don't, that's like, he didn't inspire the name of it, but what a cool name for a beer, I thought.
All right. Hey, we got a special call-in guest. So there's a dude out there named Chris Bradley. He's got Destination Beer TV show, which is a TV show about beer. And Chris, thanks for calling in. We've got a very cool show right now, but you're welcome to join us.
Yeah,
how you doing, man?
To be there live. Sounds like you're having a good time.
Are you listening to the show?
I am listening to the show. Pizza and beer,
yeah.
And radio, and I mean, it's a good combination.
So what breweries will you be shooting your TV show at?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am drinking one of your local brews and a brewery that will be featured on our first season. Brooklyn Brewery is going to be a part of what we're doing. We've got 11 breweries lined up right now besides Brooklyn. We've got 21st Amendment out in San Francisco. We have Deschutes in Bend, Oregon, Carbach in Houston, NOLA in New Orleans, Cigar City in St. Pete, Nebraska Brewing Company, Boulevard, New Glarus, Yingling, and we're working on some details with a few others.
Great, man. And where can we see your show?
Well, we don't have a deal lined out yet for TV, so at the moment our plan is to put it on our YouTube channel and make it easy for everybody to see. Right now we're still doing some fundraising, trying to pay for the production. We started a crowdfunding campaign a few weeks ago and talking to some local advertisers, some big advertisers, trying to put the money together to fund the show. And then once we have once we've shot the episodes and produced them, we plan to start putting them out there for the public in February with new spring programming.
Awesome. Chris, that's awesome. I'll tell you what, hang in there and listen to the show with us. We got some special guests in from England, so we're going to talk more with them now, okay? So
All right. Just hang in.
If you want to join in with some questions, you can. But thanks for joining us, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, buddy. Okay, so that's cool. We got guys all over the country now making beer TV shows and films. There's a guy named Michael Ferguson. I don't know if you know him, Chris. He's a master brewer, and he's got a show out called Beer Geek TV. So there's a lot more stuff going on in beer media. But what fuels it all is what you guys are doing. So I'd like now to talk more about the English guys. Tell us a little more. So I'd like to know. Tell me where you're from in England and you know, some other brewers that you might know. Because we've interviewed guys from Thornbridge, you know, Sam Smith, Bruce Williams from the Williams Brothers, and the Andrew from Wild Ale Company. But tell us more about the actual region you're in and something like the town and the names and, you know,
yeah,
the beers that you drink on a regular basis.
Yeah, Buxton Brewery's based in Buxton, which is like sort of an hour outside Manchester. It's in the county of Derbyshire and
sort of right in the middle of England. We're based very near sort of a lot of those guys, actually. So the guys at Thornbridge are very good friends of ours. The scene over there is really, really tight at the moment. You know, everyone kind of gets on pretty well. There's quite a good collaboration scene as well, and this was part of the whole thing that sort of brought the Rainbow collaboration series together, was the fact that we were all like quite chummy. I mean, ourselves and Magic Rock are not that far apart at all. We're probably about an hour apart from each other, and myself and Richard know each other for years. So, you know, we'll be collaborating this year, and there's guys like right across the scene who we like to hang out with. We all really get on a lot. So yeah, that's really cool. Everyone's working together and sort of aiming at the similar goals. So
it's like Yorkshire area.
But we're just south of Yorkshire, about an hour outside of Manchester. So they're kind of the big cities. Manchester's the big city that people would know up around there.
That's like a good some brewing history up there, right?
Yorkshire
squares kinda, and things.
There's a lot of very, very traditional brewing goes on around Manchester and Yorkshire and throughout all of that area. You know, the big history of family breweries who are kind of the largest part of the brewing market up there. But we're kind of trying to do something a little bit new rather than sort of emulate exactly what they've done all the time. And I guess we're kind of, in some ways, doing more sort of recently American-inspired stuff. So we're doing like a lot of big IPAs and Imperial Stouts, but still trying to keep sort of a traditional touch on. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of new stuff at the moment as well. So, yeah, it's really cool.
All right. Chris, do you know a lot about English beer history?
I know a fair amount about English beer history, but a curiosity of my own is, do you have difficulty acquiring the American hops when you're brewing the American-style IPAs and stuff?
It's tricky. It's not the easiest thing in the world at the moment. Obviously, we're dealing sort of through secondary brokers. So, obviously, you've got to kind of keep backtracking, and contracts for most people at the moment are kind of booked almost 3 years ahead now.
The reason I ask is brewers here are having a hard time getting hops.
Yes. We have the same with it. We use a lot of hops from New Zealand and Australia as well, and I have friends out in New Zealand, and when I phone them going, we pay so much for New Zealand hops, and you must be able to like get them. Obviously, the problem we have is that you guys are soaking them all up, and it's like, nope. We don't get them either, and we pay pretty much as you guys do. So, I think the world hop market's kind of in a little bit of a state at the moment. But I don't really know. It's kind of a tricky one, really.
How long have you been brewing?
Personally, I've been brewing for 14 years. I've been brewing at Buxton for two of those now.
What was your first brewing job?
My first brewing job was in Liverpool at the Liverpool Brewing Company, which was a tiny little sort of a five barrel operation. We were just brewing for the pub where we were, and I was head brewer there for 3 years.
He's directing which beer we're going to.
Sorry,
go for it. What's the first beer we had? Because we're having so many.
The beer we're drinking at the moment is Axe Edge, which is kind of our flagship IPA. Really, it's 6.8%. It's Citra, Mosaic, and Amarillo hops.
Very nice.
You know he loves his beer because BR is about to pour the beer and he's like directing her. You care, right? You really care about your beer, man. It comes
through. No, completely. I mean, that's the entire basis of my job is caring how good the beer I drink is, which is obviously a terrible chore. I can't imagine my pain every day having to go in and like, I've got to taste these beers now. It's going to be all right.
So you were at Liverpool, and then where'd you go after that?
Then after there, I was at moved over to the Marble Brewery in Manchester. I was second brewer there for best part of 9 years. And they were quite a big deal in the British brewing scene at the time.
Marble were a big inspiration to me starting Magic Rock, really. There was only a few guys at that time doing what they were doing, you know, really hopping stuff really heavily, whether it be... there used to be a lot of whole hops used in dry hopping and cask, didn't there? But they were using T90s as well, pelletized hops, and they were getting really big, bold flavours out of the hops, but still really good drinkability, lots of sessionable beer. 3.9% beers with hopping rates the same as 7-8% IPAs, you know, and they've been doing that for, what, 5-6 years there?
Yeah, going back to I started there, I guess, in like 2003, 2004. And so, yeah, going back that far, we were very, very hop-led brewery. We were really, really into, you know, the sort of hop expressions. So, yeah, though, did 9 years out there, and that was really, really fun. Then I moved up. I was brewing in Scotland for a couple of years at the Black Isle Brewery, who were a fully organic brewery. I mean, you talk about difficulty getting hold of hops. Try brewing organic beer in the UK, and you're going to really struggle to get that sort of stuff sorted out. So I did a couple of years up there, and it was absolutely fantastic. A really, really great experience. But then got offered the job at Buxton, and it was a great move for me, because it was kind of like the leash was finally let off. I mean, because I was second brewer at Marble, and then I was kind of limited by the organic status of the Black Isle Brewery, but when I got to move down to Buxton, it was kind of like, okay, all those beer ideas you've had for the last couple of years, it's time to just let loose with them and go for it.
Pierre, how did you find these guys?
That's a good question. I was actually asking our UK manager, Kevin, about this, because it turns out it was before both of our times that we hooked up with Buxton. I know for Magic Rock, it's been a lot. They're a more recent brewery, so it's only been about a year and a half. I mean, but you know, we've had a long history with British breweries. We've got Ridgeway. We've got Coniston, yep. Yeah. So you know, there's a love for British beers, which often are just, especially in the U.S., just they really fly under the radar. You know, some fantastic beers, and people just think they're boring. They think of
Timothy Taylor, a landlord.
Yeah,
Chris, have you had that Timothy Taylor, the landlord? No.
Yeah, they just think it's an oxidized, boring beer that's not too hoppy, not, you know, if it's what people think of British beers. They think of British bitters and pale ales, which, done well, are fantastic, but it's hard to get traction. And
so
it's nice.
What's the full Shelton Brothers UK portfolio? We just mentioned a couple of them, but...
We've got Adnams as well. We've been working with them. Timothy Taylor.
Fine Ales
from Scotland, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And Siren we mentioned before. And we also have some...
Weird Beard, they're a new one out there.
And fantastic cider makers as well. You know, we've had Tom Oliver. Yes. We've met Tom Oliver and some of our other cider makers. So
you two have an amazing... There's a lot of stuff going on in UK. We got to go there and check it out, man.
It's changed completely. It's not the market it was 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think.
No, not at all. The scene's almost been completely turned on its head over the last couple of years. Like guys like Magic Rock have really, really come through. And you know,
I mean, just 5 years ago, you guys were bringing in like Ridgeway, a cask, or a Coniston Old Bluebird. You know, and there wasn't much more than that. That was great beer. But
I think 5 years ago it was primarily Ridgeway and Coniston were our
Dark Star.
We've done a few casts from Dark Star, but we don't do them on a regular basis.
Yeah. And all right, man. This is cool. There's going to be a lot going on in the show tonight. But number one, it's Gun Hill. Cheers to you guys. Won the gold medal at GABF. We got Yeppe hosting a special event tonight at Taurus with some of these guys. And we got Colin from Buxton and Rich from Magic Rock. I love saying that. All right. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are at Bushwick's and Roberta. We're talking about Bushwick's and Roberta. Listen to me, man. I could have too many foreign export stouts. It was like, Chris, what, you started us with your regular oatmeal stout and from Gun Hill, and then we had the Void of Light foreign export stout. And now we jumped over to England. We got Buxton's. What is this? Is another like strong stout?
Yeah, this is our Yellow Belly. It was part of the Rainbow collaboration, so it's a It's an imperial stout brewed for peanut butter and biscuit flavor, but without any peanut butter or biscuits.
So I said that we're at Bushwick's and Roberta's. There's a new borough, Roberta's. It kind of is like that out here, you know? I mean, yeah, but you can, when we come out here, sometimes you bring out your family. You get your two sons, your wife, who names all your beers.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a good team.
We live close by, so, you know, it's always fun to, after we go on the radio, to bring the family out and have pizza, and I like this place a lot.
So we've been tasting some good beers. So tell me about your collaboration with these guys.
I mean, we actually have two of them right here, the two we made with Buxton about a month ago. So Colin and I had discussed it on email, and actually came up with this idea of doing something extremely simple, doing a one malt, one hop beer. And since it was in England, I wanted to do a barley wine. And we pretty much just tried and test the system as much as we could, see how high we can go in alcohol with only adding malt. It was a fun brew day and very simple. You know, brewing with one malt is not something you do that often, but it's fun to see how much you can get out of very few ingredients or so.
Nice. And what's the next beer we're pouring, BR? It's Bearded Ladies or something?
Yeah, you're going to have to ask Richard about that one. Come on, Richard. I just opened it.
So guys, talk it to the mic or don't talk at all.
It's our bourbon barrel-aged Bearded Lady. So Bearded Lady, obviously fitting in with the circus theme, is our imperial stout. We do that beer infrequently, but we do it. But this one we do seasonally, annually, I guess. And depending on what bourbon barrels we can get, you know, it changes the character and stuff. We try to get good ones. It's not that easy in the UK, really. I mean, we've got good cooperages in Scotland, and obviously they're using a lot of the bourbon, but we were talking about this earlier, me and Colin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very hard to come by really, really good bourbon barrels. I guess the US market's probably soaking up the majority of what comes out there. So we similarly have just done an Imperial Stout that we're aging in a mix of Jim Beam, Jack Daniel's barrels. You kind of got to get whatever you're given, really, when it comes out in the UK.
We need to get better at that stuff. You know, we need to plan ahead, see what's available, get on it. You know, it's different.
I'm not so sold on the bourbon, the barrel aging stuff. I don't know how you feel, Yeppe and Chris, but I like just like some good basic beers, and I love specialty beers. But I feel like America was already doing that with the barrel aging. So
yeah,
I don't know if you're going to gain anything by doing it.
No, I
think it's going to find that people think it's too overpowering.
I do agree with you to a point, but it's nice to kind of experiment with sort of strong flavors. And like I was saying, the UK market's changed so much now that we're not trying to make boring brown beer anymore. Everyone's trying to make sort of, you know, trying to integrate the biggest flavors they can while still sort of remaining drinkable. So,
yeah, and you've had sort of 10, 15 years of Bourbon County Stout. You know, we've had it there, but people haven't been introduced to it really. So like now the new wave of beer drinkers are getting on stuff. They're like, wow, that's a lot of flavor, you know. So yeah. I agree in some respects. You know, what we want is super drinkable beer. We're not after crazy, intense flavor too much, but it's nice to do it sometimes.
Well, it's a nice beer. Chris, what about you?
I agree with you, Jimmy, to the extent that it can be very much overdone. A lot of them, the oak is very overpowering, and usually I do enjoy barrel-aging beer, but typically when I do it, I like to cut it a little. You know, I'll age a certain quantity in the barrel and then blend it off with virgin beer to achieve the desired level of oakiness and or whiskey or rum or whatever character you're gaining from the oak in order to achieve the desired level. But there is something to be said for the very demanding market for beers of this nature.
Yubby.
I mean, yeah, I do barrel-aged beers, but my whole philosophy for doing barrel-aged beers has always been, if I think it can improve the beer, I'll put in a barrel. If I don't think it can improve the beer, I won't. And when I see people put an Imperial Stout in a Chardonnay barrel, it makes me think, is that only just to sell more beer and be able to charge more? Because it doesn't make a lot of sense for me to put an Imperial Stout in a Chardonnay barrel. But I actually think the flavors of bourbon, for example, suits an Imperial Stout well. I mean, we have a lot of the same flavors in the stout anyway. If you can just enhance those flavors, it makes a lot of sense. And that's what I like to do.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You know, I mean, I think an Imperial Stout in bourbon's a no-brainer, really. It's like, it goes so well together. It just makes the beer into a dessert, really. You get the vanilla that, and the oak really brings out the malt character. It softens everything out. Depending on how long you leave it, the quality of the bourbon barrels is a real challenge for us in England. But, yeah, I mean, the results are generally good and they're generally positive for everyone. And I want to create a small amount of a buzz. You know, I know it's old hat in the US to do that, to have an annual bourbon release, but it's kind of new in the UK and people dig it, so.
One thing, it's old hat, but it's not. It's like last month, Patrick Rue from the brewery in California was out here in New York, and he brought a bunch of beers that were 16, 18% that were so drinkable. And I don't know what he did, if they were sour mashed or something, but this, I mean, there's definitely people pushing it, and there's good ones, right?
I think, and we had discussed this earlier, Colin and Richard and I, about a lot of times Americans, they do it because they can, and it becomes a very one-dimensional beer. I mean, I had recently, it was, I believe, a Belgian-style triple aged in either Calvados or Cognac barrel on cask. And it was just a sticky, sweet mess. It was terrible. I mean, it's just not what you want to drink. You need.
I've had an IPA aged in a Lefroy barrel, and it was absolutely undrinkable and disgusting.
You know, but it's all about the balance. And as Jeppe said, does that help the beer? You know, is it something that's going to, you know, work on the flavors that are already in the beer and complement them? You know, we work with Jolly Pumpkin, for example, and Ron ages everything in barrels, but he does it with a very subtle hand. So you've got, you know, acetobacters that are already in the wood, things that are going to work with the beer, not against it, to make it to something where you just don't want to drink.
I think we discussed this beer when we were at Brooklyn, and I said it a number of times this week. The most important thing for a brewer, as far as I'm concerned, definitely, as the owner of the brewery, is I want people to have another one. You know, it's okay to be experimental, but the beer has to be super drinkable, and that's what we're all trying to kill, you know, because it's easy to be wild and be crazy with flavor, but it's not so easy to make things drinkable. And if someone wants another one, we've done it, you know.
The one thing I've noticed is that you say brewers do it because they can. It's actually becoming increasingly difficult to do. Acquiring the barrels is becoming increasingly expensive. We were able to procure, I have some of my Void of Light aging in barrels currently, and I have two rum barrels that I have it aging in. I have four rye whiskey barrels and two other barrels that are of unknown origin. So I have the beer in three different types of barrels, and ultimately I will blend them all off together. But at this point in time, from my experience, the barrels are becoming increasingly expensive. The first time I aged my beer in barrels when I was working at Chelsea, I was able to acquire the barrels for $30 a piece. These barrels this time around cost $135 per barrel or more. It was like, yeah.
David, join in. This is kind of interesting. So you got the brewer and the owner here. How do you guys decide, you know, when you've got a successful beer like the Void of Light, how do you decide to go to the next level, and what discussions do you guys have in terms of costs and things?
In terms of the barrels, or just, well, we sit down, Chris, Kieran, and myself, and we discuss. We discuss everything together when it comes to that, but particularly with this, because we barrel aged our first version of the Void of Light, the batch that we made that actually won the award, and that was partially due to space constrictions, which is why we barrel aged the first version. And so that was incredibly popular both in the market and in our tasting room. And so when we knew we were going to make another batch after we won the award, the discussion wasn't so much as, are we going to do it again, but how much are we going to put into barrels, and where and when can we get these barrels in? So that was sort of one of the things. After the first version was so successful, that sort of led us to believe we had no choice but to do this again.
Yeah. And then you have the same kind of discussions at your brewery, Rich?
With regard to the barrels?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, we were discussing it earlier today, weren't we? It really needs to be something we take a lot more seriously. You know, we've committed to doing a barrel-aged bourbon beer every year, which we discussed here is not a new thing, but new for the UK. And we're always looking for barrels. We're a little bit hand-tied at the moment because we're still in a small facility. We're just about to expand to a bigger one. We'll be able to expand the barrel program once we're in the new facility. So overall, though, it's so important to pick good quality, you know, in the barrels, you know. you spend so much effort and time on making a good beer and tweaking the recipe and, like, you know, doing everything you can to make that beer the best it can. Then if you put it in some crappy barrels, you know, what is the point? You know, you've got to look hard at the barrels as well. And it's increasingly difficult because all of us want the good barrels. So, and in the UK, we're sort of back of the queue, really. I mean, I guess they use first fill bourbon for Scotch. So if we can get some relationships going with the cooperage and the distilleries, hopefully we can get some good barrels. But we've been discussing trying to get in on a container full of barrels and,
Trying to get something. Obviously, a lot of people in the UK really want to do it at the moment. So we're trying to sort of think that we can get almost like a collaboration of brewers together to buy a container of bourbon barrels in, because, like I say, most of them get sucked up by the US market, I guess, or then get soaked up by the Scotch market in Scotland, and they're bringing so many in that if we could filter some of what they're buying off them, then potentially it becomes easier for us to get hold of that sort of thing. But just to kind of dive back on a previous point, the flavour of the spirit and the wood that you're using has to complement completely what the beer is all about. I mean, you can't just kind of, like Jeppe was saying, you can't just sort of throw something in a Lafroig barrel and go, yeah, that's going to be great at the end of it. You know, those flavors have to work together, and an IPA and a big peaty smoky Scotch is going to be horrible. Mm-hmm. And how sort of a brewery doesn't see that with open eyes is a little bit painful. You know, like, I've been working for the last couple of years on a project where I'm trying to develop a barley wine that I want to age in cognac barrels, because those are complementary flavours. You know, those are things that will work together. And, to do otherwise would just be foolish, really.
Yeppe.
Yes.
What's new with you, man?
A lot of things are new.
I know. It's so weird having the show and not letting you talk too much. But
no, it's all right. I mean, it's fun to listen to other people from time to time. But, you know, there's a lot of new things going on. I just came down from Tampa, Florida. This Sunday, I went down and brewed with my good friends at Cigar City and Seventh Son, which is a very small brewery in Dunedin or whatever it's called out there. It was a fun time, and I've been wanting to brew with those guys for a long time, so that is coming out.
In Florida.
It was in Florida, yeah. And
the
I went
state
to
of Florida.
The in state America. Of Florida, Tampa.
And we're back in America. We went down to Florida.
Exactly.
And Davey's like, I know Florida, right?
I'm actually off to Brazil again on Monday. I got invited to a big beer festival down in Brazil where I'm going to do some speeches and talks and stuff like that. So that's exciting.
All right, man. Well, this has been a good show. We had a lot of things going on, but I was really happy to have all the guests on. We're going to do a little sign-up. Special events coming up tonight at Torst. What's the event, Yeppe?
The event is the Rainbow Collaboration Project, where 14 brewers, 7 from the UK and 7 from outside of the UK but in Europe, teamed up and made 7 beers inspired by the colors of the rainbow. And it was presented in Europe about a month ago, and we were lucky enough to get a keg of each through Shelton
Brothers.
That's
a cool project, and I can't believe I just heard about it. I mean,
yeah, we should give
a
little...
Is there a website or something?
We should give a little shout-out to Ryan, probably, from Siren here. Yeah. He's such a creative guy. He's a very, very friendly guy.
Siren the Brewery.
Yeah.
Is there a website, BR, to learn about this, the Rainbow Project?
I would just check out the Siren Brewing website. You know, Ryan unfortunately went straight from L.A. He went back home, so wasn't able to stop by and be at the event tonight. But he's the one who conceived of this idea.
And quick wrap-up. So all these guys were at the Shelton Brothers event, the festival...
Yes.
In L.A. last
weekend.
In L.A.
this Saturday and Sunday. Yep.
It was a good time?
Along with Emilio Estevez. Who knew he liked good beer? But he does.
How many brewers did you have at the... So you had the festival. The first year was what? 2 years ago was Worcester, Massachusetts.
Mass. Last year was Portland, Maine.
And this year, L.A.
We gave some love to the West Coast, and we've got to bring it back to the East Coast. We just can't... We can't do it West Coast again.
Well, we missed you. But it was a good time for everybody, and that's why these guys are here, and this is amazing.
It's fantastic to me, because the idea behind the festival is that it's not just some brewery rep or volunteer pouring the beers. It's like the brewers, the owners are there talking about their beer, and it's a very exciting experience for even the brewers who are like able to see all these people together in one spot, as opposed to, you know, having to travel to other breweries. You know, collaborations are hatched there.
And how about for you guys? I mean, for Colin and Rich from UK, what was your experience at the festival in Los Angeles?
It was fantastic. I mean, we were saying on the Friday night we had like a brewers get together, and we all got together and had dinner and a couple of beers. And we said It was kind of a joke that a few of us were saying that, you know, if a plane crashed in this venue right now, beer in the world would be a much, much worse place. The collection of brewers over there were really, really wicked, and it was nice to kind of come over and, you know, touch base with some of our American, some of the American drinkers who may or may not have been in contact with us before.
Great to meet you. And Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it was a thrill. Who wouldn't want to share an SM Pale Ale with Armin de Belder from Dryfontein? Because that's what happened on the Friday night. You know, we went back to the hotel and he gave of his time, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing, you know, and Shelton Brothers do that. They bring a lot of people together, so it was superb.
All right, man. This is a great show. And then Chris and Davey, what's going on at Gone Hill Brewing? Any new beers coming out or special events coming up in New York City?
I have an Imperial IPA coming down the pike. I expect to probably have that out in the market in maybe about a week or so. It could be a little bit more, depending. That's weighing in over 10% right now. And it's very heavily hopped, and people can expect a hop bomb, nice, big, strong.
You know, and a great beer destination is it, what train goes up to Gun Hill?
The 5 train and the 2 train.
So you go all the way to the end, and then what, you have to walk?
You go to Gun Hill Road, and then you get off, and it's about a 7-block walk from the end of, from the train. And there's also a bus that takes you.
And so when's the tasting? They have a great tasting room. When's the tasting room open?
Tasting room is open 7 days a week. We open at 1 o'clock during the week and 12 o'clock on the weekends, and we're open till about 9 or 10 o'clock every night.
I was up there this summer, man. It's a great place. Worthy destination. So if you guys are visiting New York, go up to Gun Hill, the brewing and the Gun Hill. So Gun Hill is an historical section too, right?
It is. The name Gun Hill Road actually comes from the Revolutionary War. During the war in Woodlawn Cemetery, there's a hill that the colonists took all their guns and ammunition and put it up on top of the hill, and they actually fired down on the British. And the British retreated on. Sorry, guys. They retreated on. they retreated on the road, and the road, which was known as Kingsbridge Road, became known as Gun Hill Road. So there was it had very big significance during the Revolutionary War, which is where a lot of our branding and our imagery comes from.
All right. Well, he wants to say something now.
Sorry about that.
But anyways, it's a great place. And again, it's a brave new frontier of all these awesome new breweries in New York City. You guys are taking big risks in these tough neighborhoods where there was nothing before you, and you're changing the landscape. So in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Hopefully I get everybody's name. Thanks to Chris, Dave, Rich, Colin, Yeppe, Chris, and BR. For joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Assassins Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.